Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're going to spend the rest of the show talking about the controversial issue of vaccines. And to begin this conversation, I want to bring to your attention a clip that was played on ABC News a couple of nights ago about Robert De Niro pulling the film Vaxxed from the Tribeca Film Festival. So the first thing you'll hear, and I'm sorry about the audio, it's for this first part, it's not quite as good as being in the studio, but you should be able to hear it, and you can hear how the story is presented. And then after that, we have a clip that we found on YouTube of the actual interview that ABC did with the producer of the film, Vaxxed, about the whole vaccination issue. Okay, here we go. First is the ABC News clip.
The decision to run a controversial documentary about vaccines has Robert De Niro at the center of a big screen backlash. But late tonight, a new twist. ABC's Eva Pilgrim has more.
Tonight, the film festival Robert De Niro started under fire. The Hollywood heavyweight initially defending the screening of a controversial new film that many are characterizing as anti-vaccine.
Grievous harm to innocent children.
De Niro writing in a statement why this is important to the actor and his wife. Grace and I have a child with autism. This is very personal to me and my family, and I want there to be a discussion, though he isn't anti-vaccine. That statement generating backlash on Twitter, comments like disappointing and really irresponsible. The film is directed by Andrew Wakefield, who authored the faulty study that linked vaccines and autism. That report now retracted and Wakefield stripped of his medical license.
This film is just the truth as we have found it.
But the message from the medical community is clear.
This is one of those scientific questions that where science has provided an answer. Study after study have been done and have shown vaccines do not cause autism.
And late tonight, a reversal from the star, De Niro telling ABC News that after conferring with scientific experts, he's decided Vaxxed will be taken out of the Tribeca Film Festival, saying he does not believe it contributes to the discussion I had hoped for. Eva Pilgrim, ABC News, New York.
Okay,
yeah.
Are we ready?
Hold on, let me turn my phone off. Great, I'm gonna put that over there.
Okay, so
all right, ready to go.
Okay, thank you. We're rolling.
Okay.
Whenever y'all are ready.
Great. So the first thing I wanted to ask you is just to say your name and spell it.
My name is Del Bigtree. That's first name D-E-L. My last name is Bigtree. B-I-G-T-R-E-E.
And what do you want your title to be on the screen?
Vaxxed, from cover-up to catastrophe. Oh, my title personally? Producer.
Yes.
Producer.
Producer with the name of the film. Okay.
Yep.
So the first thing I wanted to ask you is, what made you want to be involved in this film when the idea first came to you to be a producer?
I have been a producer on the daytime talk show, The Doctors, the best medical talk show in the world. I'm known for doing stories that a lot of people don't want to touch. I've done stories about pesticides and GMO foods and pollution and how these things are affecting the health of people and their children. So I became aware of the CDC whistleblower story, and I was beginning to investigate it and look into it. And that led me all the way to Andy Wakefield. And I met Andy Wakefield and discovered that he had been working with Brian Hooker, and they had been speaking on the phone with a whistleblower from the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control. And this whistleblower was saying that the CDC had committed fraud on the MMR study and that they believed that it was actually a connection between autism and this vaccine. And I looked at the data that the CDC whistleblower was providing to Andy and Brian, and it is the most compelling evidence of fraud I've ever seen in my life. And I realized in that moment that I was looking at probably the biggest story of my lifetime. And as a journalist, I realized it was a story I had to tell. And I had to help Andy Wakefield. Go ahead.
Concern you that Dr. Andy Wakefield had been accused of so many things and that his study from 2004 had been debunked?
It's absolutely concerning when you think about the history of Andy Wakefield. When you look at a career I had a great career as a medical producer on a great show, to leave that and work with something like Andy Wakefield is, most people would say it's career suicide. So that's why I had to investigate Andy Wakefield before I ever went near this story. And I did all of my research, and I looked very deep into the fraud surrounding Andy Wakefield and his career. And it would fill a whole book or a whole other movie if I was to explain to you every detail that I found. So let me just say this. The world lost one of the greatest scientific minds of our times when Andy Wakefield was taken from us. This was a man who was doing studies that were going to lead to healthier vaccines and better ways to take care of the health of our children. That, unfortunately, was going to cost a lot of money for the vaccine industry, and they cared a lot more about their industry and their money than they did about the health of children. And so I can confidently say, and I'm proud to be working on this picture about the CDC whistleblower with Andy Wakefield.
I'm just taking notes. So what's your hope for this film? What do you want people to take away after they see it?
Well, the first hope is I want people to know the truth. I think that vaccines need to be made safer. I think money needs to be spent to do that, and more research and study needs to take place. What you realize when you look at these claims by the CDC whistleblower, Dr. William Thompson, is that the studies we have been trusting are not being carried out correctly. There's fraud taking place. I don't know where that ends, and I'd really like a lot more reporters to start getting on this story and getting to the bottom of it. It used to be when something like this happened in the media that we would all jump on it. When a CDC whistleblower, a top scientist from the CDC comes forward and says, hey, we're committing fraud in here, I would have expected every news agency in the world to jump in there and investigate that story. And I'm amazed that this film is the only ones that are looking at it. So I want the truth. I want vaccines to be safer for our children, and I want vaccines to be tested with the same rigors that every drug we take are. There's this free pass being given to vaccines, and it appears some of them may be dangerous, and we're injecting these things directly into the veins of our babies. I want better testing.
So the people here that watch the trailer, it's scary, and it's sort of ominous, and the wording. Is the intent of this film to scare people, or more or less to just inform them?
This film is just the truth as we have found it. And if that truth is scary, then I don't know what to say about that. This is not a sensationalized film, and if you see it, you will realize it's really just a fact-based movie. It's alarming. We all thought that this discussion was over, that the vaccine autism link had been disproven and we could all move on. I know that I thought that, and everyone I worked with thought that, until new information came forward. New information from a CDC scientist who was involved in the exact study that we all point to when we say vaccines are safe. We're being told that's a fraud. And in our film, we show you the data and the proof that it's a fraud. If that's alarming, it should be. But we don't have to go out of our way to make it alarming. It is what it is.
From the study that Wakefield came under fire for in 2004, and then again in 2010.
How is it? Can you tell me that question?
Is there anything new in this that he wasn't saying then?
What's new in this story is that we have the most important health agency in the world that is supposed to be looking out for the health of children. And they are throwing out data and removing data and changing numbers on studies to make a vaccine seem safe. It's nothing like what Andy Wakefield was involved in, but it does point to this MMR vaccine. The MMR vaccine appears to be problematic. Andy Wakefield was just beginning to do research in looking at that, and the CDC actually did the study we're talking about because they knew Andy Wakefield was looking at it, and he'd spoken to Congress about it. So they went and did their own study, and it appears that they found the exact same thing that Andy Wakefield did. And when they saw it, what they decided to do was to hide it and cover it up.
What sort of research went into making this film?
I've spoken
for you.
I flew all over the country, and I've spoken to people from all around the world, scientists and specialists. We've had mathematicians and doctors all look at this. and we've spoken to people about their specialties. I've covered this as thoroughly as any story I've ever done as a medical journalist in my life. And the really sad thing is the amount of doctors I've spoken to that say to me, Del, I know that vaccines are causing autism, but I won't say it on camera because the pharmaceutical industry will destroy my career just like they did to Andy Wakefield. And that's where we find ourselves, being bullied by an industry that doesn't actually care about the health of our children the way it should.
And what do you say to the critics of this film, the people that are angry that this is airing at the Tribeca Film Festival?
I would say to the critics of the film, I thought in order to critique a film, you had to see the film. I find it amazing the pages and pages of reviews I'm seeing about my film, all based on a 2.5 minute trailer. It reminds me of when I was in third grade and I kind of cheated on my book review because I hadn't read the book. What I'd say to the critics is see the movie and then you can have an opinion about it. But for major news outlets to be telling people, don't go see this movie. I mean, what's next? Are we going to have papers tell us go out and burn books? This is about freedom of expression. These are about thoughts. We have a real whistleblower at the CDC. I'd like these critics to do their job and look into that story. We need help here. There's a major cover-up going on, and it's affecting millions of children.
Is there anything else you want to add? I know that we're tight on time to bring this, you know, to make sure it makes air.
I just wanted to say that this is not an anti-vaccine movie. This is a movie about fraud, scientific fraud committed by the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, the most important study body on health in the world. That's what this film is about. It's not about Andy Wakefield. It's not about me. It's about Dr. William Thompson. And people need to see this story if they want to know the truth about vaccines, if they want to get involved in making these vaccines safer for their children. I also want to thank Tribeca. It is such an honor as a filmmaker to be selected by Tribeca, one of the greatest film festivals in the world. I am proud that they have stood by their decision to screen this film in the face of immense pressure. They have stood by their goal to make Tribeca an open forum for important discussions just like this one.
Great.
For looking at this in more depth, we have in the studios Vix and Vox, the click and clack of vaccines. They're citizen scientists who have been researching this topic. They are not professionals in the medical world. This is another approach. The citizen scientists are people who have taken a deep interest in issues and have investigated them because of their own concern of the topic. Both Vix and Vox are well-educated. Vox is an attorney with a vaccine-injured child, and Vix is an MBA who was vaccine-injured in the midst of her career. And they're both in the studio here to share with us what this whole controversy is all about. So welcome to the studio, Vix and Vox.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Sun and Al.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. Can you tell us why you chose Zam de Plume today rather than your real names? For starters.
Sure. We chose pseudonyms because there's a little bit of danger in coming out and actually even questioning whether or not vaccines are safe, even though it's a perfectly reasonable question.
Yes, there are people who have been threatened, doctors who have been murdered, like Dr. Bradstreet and others. And if you come out, you get attacked. So it would be better to put the information out there so people can research themselves. There is danger in coming out with a position because anyone who has in the past, they are immediately attacked and silenced, as Robert De Niro is an example of, and other people have had that happen.
Yeah, so what happened at the Tribeca Film Festival there as far as you two can figure it out?
Well, a movie called Vaxxed was produced by a doctor who used to produce the very popular TV show The Doctors. And Robert De Niro's staff chose it as a selection for the Tribeca Film Festival. But then he had to pull it back because he got so much pressure from the industry that it was anti-science, even though people hadn't viewed it
Yes, I hear the word debunked all the time, and the doctor himself had his MD pulled. That was Wakefield, I think Dr. Wakefield behind that.
Oh, what happened with Dr. Wakefield is he's one of the most prolific researchers and one of the highest regarded gastroenterologists at the Royal Free Hospital. Right.
In
so,
the UK.
Yeah, and there were 7 or 9 authors on the study. And this particular study of all of that he did was only of 12 children. And he actually looked at the children.
Actually, he didn't personally look at the children because what happened is moms with kids who developed autism and bowel disease right after their MMR came to him because he was a preeminent gastroenterologist at the Royal Free Hospital. And he wasn't a clinician at the time. He was a researcher. So he actually sent the kids to be evaluated by other researchers. And he became the first author on the paper because he brought everybody together.
But that's the beginning of this controversy.
That's right.
We got to take a break for a second. And we're a commercial station here. So we'll continue with the vaccine story in a moment with Vix and Vox. This is Dr. Future Show. Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking to Vix and Vox, citizen scientists investigating the whole vaccine controversy, especially with the recent information about the vaxxed film being pulled from the Tribeca Film Festival. We do have some questions about what it is that they were trying to reveal that is so controversial. A whistleblower from the CDC?
Right. Do you want us to finish up the stuff about Wakefield and then
well, Wakefield, okay, just to back it up a little bit, let's tell the audience who Wakefield is.
Okay.
Well, he's a preeminent gastroenterologist from the Free Hospital in London, which is the highest medical establishment there.
And he's the one that published one of the first papers that showed a link, a possible link.
Well, it was more of a hypothesis saying, look, this is something we need to investigate. And it was he and 8 other authors, 6 of whom backed out of the study under pressure of losing their licenses.
This is back in the late 90s, right?
Yeah, late 90s.
Okay.
And then 3 of them who stood behind it. One of them has since died, and Dr. Wakefield did not have an insurance plan that would pay for an appeal, but Dr. Walker Smith did. And when he appealed the revocation of his license, which is the same thing that happened to Wakefield, they were in it together, he actually won at an appellate level, and they said there was no fraud. They even considered putting the paper back in the Lancet, and then the Lancet got political pressure not to do it. So this whole thing about him being accused of fraud, at the court level in England, they've been absolved of liability. And Wakefield, by association with Walker Smith. And anyone could look that up.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay, so.
So fast forwarding to the recent Tribeca Film Festival fiasco with the movie called Vaxxed.
Yes.
That's Robert De Niro's film festival. He has a child with autism, and so it's an issue that's very personal to him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was juried to be selected into the Tribeca Film Festival, this movie Vaxxed, and he got a ton of pressure to pull it out. And what they were trying to reveal in there, mm-hmm. which they
the
will.
The CDC whistleblower?
Yeah, there's a CDC whistleblower. His name's William Thompson, and he and his colleagues were pressured to throw away a whole bunch of data. They literally got in a conference room and were throwing things in trash cans and deleting files from their computers because their own studies showed that the MMR vaccine, that's for measles, mumps, and rubella, was causing autism, particularly in African-American boys, and they did not want that data to get out. And William Thompson ended up saving paper copies of everything.
And then he turned them over to a Senator Posey, Representative Posey in Florida, who has all these documents. You can go on the internet and see the clips of him talking to Congress about opening up an investigation so we can just find out what happened, and nothing's happening.
Right. William Thompson apparently goes to the office at the CDC every day. He sits in an empty office room with a lamp on his desk and nothing more. That's the rumor.
It's actually more than a rumor. Yeah,
really?
It's true.
So he has been shunned, you might say, from the scientific establishment because of his whistleblowing activities.
That's
It's actually happened to him earlier, back in about, I don't remember the year, but 2004, he had concerns about the studies and the fact that they had changed the results. And then he kind of got blacklisted and pushed down and wasn't allowed to present. And then all of a sudden he was getting an offer.
Didn't he write an email to Julie Gerberding, who was then the director, and she pushed him down?
Yeah, and then he got an offer to work outside, a really good offer. And then they upped the ante at the CDC to keep him there. And the feeling is that perhaps it was to keep him quiet. So he stayed because he was under pressure to stay inside where he can't talk about the false research.
And in organizations like the CBC, which consist of thousands of people, is bound to have multiple opinions as to what best to be done under these circumstances.
Oh, sure. Yeah, the media, except for KSCO, is mostly funded by big pharma advertising dollars. And no media outlet, whether it's print or broadcast, is going to bite the hand that feeds them.
Yeah, I have noticed quite a few drug ads on mainstream media news, especially.
And not only that, I have been on the media before. And in more recent years, what I've had to say has been mutilated and turned around and twisted and made me look a lot different than what my message was.
Mm. Well, that's a classic strategy. We see it over and over again. Like, they'll give the vaccine controversy some airtime, but on the anti-vaccine side, or actually I wouldn't even call it anti-vaccine, I'd call it vaccine choice, or people who are concerned about vaccine safety. On that side, they always get a mother, not a scientist, not a medical doctor. They get a mother, and then they pit that person against a medical doctor who's totally pro-vaccine at any cost.
That happened to me, and all they did was show me baking cookies. Seriously.
Okay, I can say for one thing, I've known Vox since she was 18. She does way more than bake cookies.
Yeah.
Well, if you're a lawyer, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vox is one of the smartest people I know, besides the two of you guys.
And you.
Well, I think it's really important to really take a moment here and address, when we have a polarizing issue around personal health, how strongly people feel about it and how much people feel vulnerable to the opinions of their experts. And if the media always presents the conversation as if it's not about freedom of choice, and they always present the conversation about who do you believe, this poor emotional mother or this medical expert who has, you know, all these years of school, then of course they're leading the charge. And what I've seen is most of the people who are saying that they want this information out there are saying they're not anti-vaccine. They are pro-vaccine safety and they are pro-vaccine choice. And of course, we live in the information age where we assume that intelligent people can do their research and can find real information for themselves. And of course, we do not want to have a propaganda media that doesn't give us the right to choose what we put into our own bodies or what mothers choose to put into their children's bodies. We don't want anyone pushing that choice on us. So that's really where the emotional issue is that we don't want the laws to be pushing vaccinations on children or their parents or anyone who doesn't want to be vaccinated.
That's right, Sun. This is Vix, and I have a couple comments on that. One is that forcing vaccines on our children is actually a violation of the 14th Amendment right to parent your minor. And we have a right to decide what goes in our children's bodies. And there's only currently one out from vaccines now in California. We just passed a new law called SB 277, and it took away the personal belief exemption that used to cover religious exemptions and personal belief exemptions. Now, the only exemption we have, which is part of our Constitution, it was an amendment because of a Supreme Court decision back in 1905 that every state has to offer a medical exemption. And that's the only exemption now to vaccines in California, but it's also a violation of the 14th Amendment.
Well, it's also a violation of the First Amendment. It's a right to practice your religion. So not having a religious exemption is unconstitutional.
Have these been tested? Have these laws been tested? They're new laws on the California books, right?
I'm going to defer to the lawyer, Vox.
Not yet. I mean, this is a brand new law as of this year, 2016.
So they haven't been tested. They've just been introduced. And so a lot of people are being led to the slaughter, as it were, where they don't realize that they need to protest and make it clear that they don't agree with this law, and they need to give the due process time for this law to be tested against the Constitution.
That's right. And we're trying to delay right now the implementation of SB 277 by a couple years.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I want to take this moment to let our callers know that even though this is a call-in show, because of the sensitivity and volatility of this information, we're going to be taking questions during the last half hour of the show. And between now and then, we really are going to do our best to present a lot of factual information for all of us to discuss.
Yeah. Yes, and I wanted to let you know that we plan to do several shows on this topic. This first one with citizen science, because citizen awareness is one of the sources of information that we have besides our authorities. Some of our authorities may be compromised for various reasons, so that's why we have alternate sources of information in this day. And in this age of the internet, it's wonderful because it gives us a chance to really look at issues from multiple points of view, and that's what we strive to do here.
What is actually controversial? Because I think many people think that it's, are you pro-vaccination? Are you anti-vaccination? And that is a mischaracterization of the conversation, because most people are pro-intelligence. And pro-intelligence means that you don't decide without facts whether a vaccine is appropriate or not. You leave that decision to the individual case, where the people involved can look at their unique situation. And that's really where the argument is. We'll be back with more of the Dr. Future Show. Thanks for listening.
We have in the studio Vix and Vox, who will give us more details about that whistleblower and the study and how this relates to the vaccine controversy today. So, welcome back to the second hour.
Thank you.
Thanks, Al.
I'd like to say something. I'm very glad that Robert De Niro, who's a high-profile figure, had the chutzpah to put this film in his film festival, mm-hmm. although eventually he was pressured to take it out. This has actually been going on for a long time. I've been following vaccine news since my son was vaccine injured in around 2001, 2002. Mm-hmm. And anytime there's a new study that comes out, you know, a new safety study saying, hey, we need to look more at the safety studies and the safety aspect of vaccines, the next day, if that gets published in the Wall Street Journal, the next day you'll find something in the New York Times saying, oh, that's totally disproven. It's like they are watching every move.
Now, I hear the words debunked all the time discredited.
There is no debunked. There's two sets of science. There's the pharma, government science, because they're in bed together. And then there's independent science. And there's science happening in other countries right now that is totally credible, peer-reviewed science, discussing vaccines, the lack of safety, their connection to autoimmune diseases, connection to the Gulf War syndrome, all in peer-reviewed science, most of it outside the U.S.
Right.
But I wanted to say one more thing.
Please do.
Thank you, Vix. One of the first studies done by the government that was questionable was the Verstraten study.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Thomas Verstraten.
Exactly. And he had just like the exact same thing happened with Dr. Thompson. He had found there was a connection between vaccines and autism. And they said, go back to the books and change the study. And what they
he was doing epidemiology, so it's easy to remove a data set to make the result look different than your a priori objectives.
Hmm. Right. So they had the objective, and when they didn't like the result, they asked him to cut down the data set smaller. And they said, well, still, the incident of autism with the vaccinated is too high, cut it down again and again. So you can look back and see that the Verstraten study, what happened is under the Freedom of Information Act, they got the data and they reran the numbers and saw that they had massaged the data completely to eliminate the connection between autism.
Has this been reported in the alternative press at all?
It has
very
been
much.
For
yeah.
years.
For years and years.
This is old news. Then you have Paul Thorsen, who is another, you're laughing. He is from Denmark, right?
I don't know where he's from, but I think so.
Listen, we got to go to a commercial break. Let's continue with Paul Thorsen after the break. Okay, thank you, Vix and Vox. We'll be right back with you.
Sounds mighty strange, I agree. But now I call it home, sweet home, and swear along to be. Now, if you're hungry for food or drink, just go to the teller machine.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking to Vix and Vox, citizen scientists, the click and clack of vaccines. We're getting into the story of Paul Thorsen.
I'll quickly go through it. Paul Thorsen is a CDC researcher who was contracted to do an epidemiological study. He stole $1.2 million from the CDC's money for research and bought houses and motorcycles. You can look at the FBI website and see that he's the fourth most wanted felon. He's on the lam somewhere.
Oh,
Europe.
Really?
Yeah.
Yep.
And then Simpson Wood, the mumps efficacy case, you can talk to that, Vix.
Oh, yeah,
mumps
sure
efficacy?
Can. Yeah, so Merck makes the MMR vaccine, and they have no competition because they can show that the efficacy is above a certain rate. So each component of that vaccine, I think, has to be more than 70% effective.
Meaning, now, the MMR vaccine is a multiple vaccine?
It stands for mumps, measles, and rubella.
Yes. It does all three?
Three live viruses.
Uh-huh. And that's given to mostly?
To children. They're supposed to get two MMR vaccines before they're six. Hmm. And now they're saying it wears off, and so there's a push to get older kids vaccinated again. But Merck just got caught with two whistleblowers as well. William Thompson was the second big whistleblower in this whole thing.
And he's the one in the Vax movie.
Yeah, he's the one in the Vax movie. But before that, there are two whistleblowers at Merck who came forward. They were two lab scientists. And their supervisor came in and told them to spike the human blood with rabbit antibodies to make it look like humans were responding better to the mumps portion of the vaccine.
Than they actually were.
Yeah, than they actually were.
And that keeps the competition out of the market because no one could compete with the numbers that Merck was you know, saying they got. From
the numbers they were saying they got allowed them to keep a monopoly on the MMR vaccine. If it's proven
they're
that...
They're just saying, nobody can compete with us. We get the best results, so don't even enter the market.
No, we're talking... Right. What size market is this, may I ask? Is this billions of dollars?
Billions.
Yeah.
Each vaccine is billions of dollars.
Each vaccine.
Say it in unison?
Yeah.
billions and billions of dollars.
But the flu vaccine's even more because they market it to everyone.
Hmm. So the flu vaccine is full spectrum for everyone, the whole spectrum.
And I'd like to make a safety announcement. Mm-hmm. If you're going to get a flu vaccine, get it at your doctor's office. Don't get it at the grocery store or at the
pharmacy
because you don't have coherent records. You want to keep all your records together in case you do have a reaction.
That's right. And just so people know, only 30 to 35% of people do get the flu vaccine. There is no such thing as herd immunity with the flu vaccine because every year you'd have to have 95% of people vaccinated multiple times to get 95% of a people immune for the whole season.
Now, what do you mean? Yeah, herd immunity. Tell us about that.
Go ahead, Vox. Okay. Vox, open your mouth. You drew in a breath.
Anyways, herd immunity is another standard they use. It's constantly changing. With measles, they needed a certain threshold, but they keep moving it up to higher and higher numbers.
You can go on Wikipedia, actually, look up herd immunity, and it's different for each vaccine. It depends on how contagious the virus or bacteria is. And it turns out that measles and pertussis, for every index case, 6 to 12 people will become infected. And so those are the two most infectious diseases we vaccinate for.
Well,
not the most deadly.
The other problem is that herd immunity applies to natural diseases, and they just applied it to vaccines. But one reason it doesn't even work in the area of vaccines is because if you get a real disease, you have immunity for life. So they can calculate that it can protect the herd because you have, you know, cohorts of people who are immune from the disease. And if you have a weak person in the midst, he or she is not going to get the disease. It doesn't work with vaccines because even now they're admitting none of these vaccines confer lifetime immunity. And now they're saying with measles, at most, it's 10 years.
So that means you have to get another shot in 10 years?
Every 10 years, which means the entire adult population is not immune, anyone who hasn't had naturally occurring measles. So the whole herd immunity thing, it doesn't even make sense.
Right, because almost the entire adult population is not immune to these diseases anymore.
So let me see if I understand. So the concept of herd immunity means that, and this is really where all the controversy is between those who are pro-vaccination and anti-vaccination. Herd immunity means that if you vaccinate everybody in the herd, everybody will be free of the risk of getting the disease. And it means that if you leave half of the herd unvaccinated, that half that isn't vaccinated is at risk themselves. Not the half that's vaccinated, but the half that didn't get vaccinated is at risk themselves of getting the disease.
Yeah, that's more or less it. But the idea is to have, if you have a community who's mostly had a disease, and you have a few weak people in and amongst them, they're protected from the disease because they're unlikely to have it transmitted to them. So it's more than half. You need a much higher percentage of a group of people to be immune from the disease.
On average, 85 to 90%, depending on the disease.
Right.
Some are lower, some are higher.
Herd immunity, it doesn't even work in reality. And actually, there's a very good journal article on herd immunity that's written by Mary Holland, who is a lawyer who wrote a review article, if you look under Pace University, on herd immunity and how this concept, what it is exactly, and how it cannot be applied
two vaccines because it just doesn't work in the context. So when we all say, oh, you know, if you don't vaccinate, my kid's not protected. Well, most of the people saying that have vaccinated children. So if they believe in vaccine efficacy, their children are protected. So what's the problem?
Right.
You know,
that's my question. What's the problem if the vaccinated people are already vaccinated? Why do we need to have laws forcing people who don't want to be vaccinated to be vaccinated?
That's right. Those are some of the weakest arguments, because if you believe in vaccines and it's really a belief, you should feel like you're protected. And so you shouldn't worry about the unvaccinated.
No, wait a minute. Isn't vaccines a valid concept, though? The idea that you expose the immune system to some live disabled agents that could make you sick? Isn't it the solution that is the problem, the solution that these viruses and bacteria are in, the problem,
rather than the concept itself? Is that we're robbing Peter to pay Paul. Huh. And, you know, there's a pendulum right now. And when we started out with smallpox, it was just one vaccine. And even that was dangerous. Like, I'm reading a book right now called Dissolving Illusions, and it describes in detail with quotes from medical journals of the time. This is like the 1700s and 1800s, about how vaccinating with smallpox was causing smallpox outbreaks in the towns where people got vaccinated.
Sure. And I'm sure people know people who actually got the disease from the vaccination.
Exactly.
That is some small percentage of people who are vulnerable to that.
It was actually big in the smallpox times. So it wasn't a small percentage.
But they got better at
presumably they got better, but yeah. Smallpox suddenly dissolved in the early 1900s when we had, what was it?
Better sanitation,
but scarlet fever came in really strong in the early 1900s, and that, without a vaccine, went away on its own at the same time smallpox did.
Well, that's another thing. One of the reasons why I'm up on vaccines right now is I spent a year and a half in court defending my right to not further vaccinate my children. My children are very heavily vaccinated, and I stopped after multiple reactions. And I won my case, but I did a lot of reading. And I did a lot of reading of vaccine inserts. And most people don't, and many doctors don't read the inserts. But one, they haven't been tested to see if they're carcinogenic. Right. They haven't been tested to see if they...
Wait, let me just back up and say we're going into like the robbing Peter to pay Paul part of it, because the pendulum, I wanted to finish that, is that we are now, we think one vaccine is good, so two is better, three is even better, and as many as we can develop are the best. But now we're seeing a huge rash of side effects of things like autoimmune disease, neurological disease, and even autism.
Ticks.
Yeah.
That are correlated seizures with vaccine use.
Exactly. So
nervous ticks, like your eyes.
Yeah, a tick is the number one side effect of a vaccine injury. Mm-hmm. So back to what you were saying, because you're talking about the side effects.
I'm talking about reading the inserts themselves and sticking with this direct science. And that's what I had to do to win my case, is actually use science and show that there are a lot of peer review studies out there linking vaccine injury and autoimmunity, of which my kid had all the symptoms. And then the vaccine inserts themselves talk about the limitations of some of the science that's been done and what they haven't studied and what they haven't looked at. Another thing they haven't looked at that isn't directly written there, but they haven't looked at the amount of vaccines they've given, the frequency, and the young age they give it at. That's never been studied.
That's right. The U.S. has never studied the entire vaccine schedule as a whole in children. We've never done a study of the vaccinated versus the unvaccinated and looked at the health of those two groups.
Well, actually, there has been a study, and the apes are still at the University of Pittsburgh, and there's a lot more studies to be done on that.
But
they stopped, and they started with the Hep B study, and then all of a sudden that disappeared. You can't find it.
But that was in animals, which is progress. But what I was leading up to, Vox, is that there are a lot of studies done by private organizations and outside of the U.S. that show the difference in health between people who are vaccinated and unvaccinated, and the unvaccinated people are far healthier.
I've seen a study, a pilot study of 700 kids in the United States, where they are, that there is more autism, asthma, allergy, ADD, anxiety, pneumonia, sick hospital visits among the fully vaccinated, a slightly less percentage among the partially vaccinated, and even less among the non-vaccinated. And that study was going to be published in the PLOS One journal, which is a public library of science. They got the go-ahead, and 1 or 2 days before publication, it was pulled. Just like what happened with Vaxxed.
We have to go to a break. Thank you. And we will be taking calls after the CBS News.
Any questions about vaccines? Talk to Vixen Vox after the break.
All right, Dr. Future Show. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking to Vixen Vox on the whole issue of vaccines, especially since the pulling of Vaxxed from the Tribeca Film Festival.
And we also have callers on the line. And for folks who do want to call in, this is the half hour where you can at 479-1080.
So you ready for some callers, Vixen Vox?
Bring it on. We'd love it.
Okay.
We're glad people are listening.
Okay. Let's say hello to Cecilia and Soquel. Hi, Cecilia. Welcome to the show. Do you have some questions?
No, but I have some comments. I am vaccine compromised. In the 50s and 60s, we were given polio vaccine 3 and 4 times every single school year. The first year after we were given all of that, I got really sick. I was in second grade by that point. I was so sick that year that they almost held me back in school. And I have 2 autoimmune diseases as we speak. It took me a long, long time to get pregnant. And my health has been compromised at least half of my life. And I'm now 65. Mm. It has not been fun. It has not been fun. It's been a struggle. And as I age, it's getting harder. The other comment I had was one of you had said there's a correlation between Gulf War syndrome and vaccinations. And yes, there is. About 20, 25 years ago, I heard 2 people talk about this. They both were at the Gulf War. The one was Captain Joyce Riley. You can look all of this up. And she was in the Army, but she did not see action. And the other was a reporter. He's a Canadian reporter and author. His name is William Thomas. They both came down with Gulf War syndrome and were really, really sick. And so they put their heads together. And long story short, they realized that the correlation between them and not seeing action and yet getting Gulf War syndrome was the vaccination. And, you know, to go overseas, usually military people have to have lots and lots and lots of vaccinations.
Well, thank you for that.
Yeah, any comments?
I'd like to say that you might look into the work of Dr. Yehuda Schoenfeld, who is a world-renowned immunologist practicing, I think it's the Beth Israel Hospital in Israel.
Fox, didn't he literally write the textbook on autoimmunity used in medical schools?
He did. He is the world-renowned specialist on autoimmunity, and he specifically has many studies that go into the specifics of how the vaccine used in the military are linked to autoimmune disease and to Gulf War syndrome. So it is in peer-reviewed studies. Mm.
And it's he just came out in 2015 with a new textbook called Vaccines and Autoimmunity with like 3 dozen chapters on all sorts of different autoimmune conditions linked to vaccines.
Yeah. And this book, I'd like to say, has maybe 40 studies in it.
Actually, it's 40 chapters citing many studies.
Oh, 40 chapters with many studies. But there are hundreds and hundreds of studies. If you go onto medical journal websites, you can find studies from all different countries on concerns with vaccine safety and what's happening to our children and our adults and different things like narcolepsies linked with certain vaccines and Gulf Wars linked with certain vaccines. Guillain-Barré, MS.
Guillain-Barré syndrome is one of the biggest.
Yeah.
All right, Cecilia, I want to say you have my sympathy for your suffering. And at the latter part of the show, we're going to talk about maybe some of the thoughts our guests have on the best ways to deal with some of these vaccinated injuries.
Yeah, the solutions to all this. Okay, we have some more callers. Thank you for calling.
We have a few more callers, so thanks for
how you spell his name?
How you spell
Yehuda?
The doctor,
sure.
Yehuda?
It's Yehuda, Yehuda, and then Schoenfeld, S as in Sam, Schoenfeld. Yehuda Schoenfeld.
Okay,
we also have some references that Vixen Vox have left at our website, drfutureshow.com.
drfutureshow.com. All right, thank you.
Okay. You bet, thanks. Okay, we're going to Dawn in Felton. Hi, Dawn, welcome to the show.
Hi, I have a pun and a comment. Okay.
We like puns, only if they're punny, though.
Okay. MMR is made by Merck, as you know, so there's a little truth in advertising, because Merck is also short for mercenary. Sorry, that's dark. Okay, sometimes when people are having their debates over vaccinations, they're doing some lexical drift. The people who are pro-vaccination are only referring to the thing that's being vaccinated against, like influenza, dead virus, and stuff like that. Whereas the other side is talking about the real-world implementation of vaccines, which includes not only the vaccine, but the thimerosal, which is a mercury compound preservative, other chemicals they might add to force a reaction because your body's supposed to generate some immunity or some kind of reaction to it. Chemicals that end up in the vaccination because of the factory they're made in is not very clean. Sometimes they reuse equipment. Sometimes they use cancer cells in order to grow some of these vaccines, etc. So there's a lot of realities that are in it, including bad quality control. You know, even a 3% problem, if you count up how many people globally that adds up to, that at some point you're going to be talking about millions of people.
Yeah, thanks.
That's
okay,
right.
Okay, so, but the lexical drift is a big one because the people who really do believe in vaccines a lot of times are only thinking of the theoretical vaccine, and also because, well, nothing bad happened to me, so therefore it's fine.
Yeah, thanks. I think that's kind of why we're doing the show, Dawn, is to really keep the choice in the hands of the individual and sort of take it out of just the propaganda realm.
I have a comment. Up the crux of the issue really well.
Right. Vix and I, you know, and you all had vaccines at some point. People said, well, how come you got vaccines? Well, my first vaccine was when I was 5, and I had a single vaccine, and then a year later I might have had another one, and I maybe had 4 or 5 vaccines. Mm. But now the vaccine schedule has been pushed down to starting at 2 weeks,
right.
And there are 12 or 13 antigens. Well,
the latest thing is 70 vaccines by the time you're 18.
Yeah.
Which is just crazy.
And then if you add in all the flu shots, I was just looking at the AAP schedule, and I think it's even higher because there's now other shots that have been added since the last time I looked at the AAP schedule.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's interesting with me being an adult injured by vaccines is I just found my vaccine schedule from 1996 when I did get injured, and I had about 4 vaccines all in a very short period of time. And in animals, we actually know what this problem is called. We call it vaccinosis. When you harm or kill an animal because you over-vaccinate them with too many vaccines at once. And I basically feel like I have vaccinosis from that bulk of vaccines in 1996.
And so vaccinosis results in basically a crazy immune system that is thinking everything is an allergy?
Overreactive, yeah, autoimmune disease, neurological disorders, and allergies and asthma, diabetes.
I had a doctor once tell me a good analogy how to figure this out. Your immune system is kind of like customs and immigration. And what you're supposed to do as a customs officer is watch millions of people come in through into the country. And they're all foreigners, travelers, whatever. They are all benign molecules coming in. But once your immune system is pushed into an inflammatory state, you start shooting tourists. And so that's basically what you're doing. You're shooting this molecule and that molecule, a peanut molecule, an egg molecule. Hmm. And then when all chaos breaks loose, the customs and immigrations officers start shooting each other, and that's autoimmunity. So allergy and autoimmunity are totally related. They're both an inflammatory, they call it a Th2 shift, where the inflammatory aspect or arm of your immune system goes haywire, starts reacting to benign molecules, and you start developing allergies. But if it goes way haywire, then it starts reacting to itself and its own tissues, and that's autoimmunity. And the way vaccines work, it's pushing the Th2 side of your immune system, the inflammatory side. It's bypassing the first line of defense because our immune system is 70% of it's in our gut. So things come in through our nose and our mouth, go through our gut. That's like the citadel. So you have these sharpshooters at the citadel, and they're all in your gut, and they're shooting it out, and it's very organized how you're keeping the invaders out. And then once you get into the into the castle, that's where your vaccine bypasses your gut, goes straight into your blood system. That's where the accountants and the cooks are throwing pans and stuff to get the invaders out.
It's like Trojan horses.
It's like the Trojan horse, and there's been articles referring it to in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So the vaccines are, you know, and we have a very resilient immune system. We're able to right our bodies, but sometimes too much is too much. And you can't pull back from that, and it's chaos inside the citadel.
Well, given how many vaccines that our military servicemen are given, wouldn't you see more of an incidence of this vaccinosis in the
military? And that's the point of all the studies. And what happened was the Gulf War soldiers, they got the same vaccines whether they were deployed to Saudi Arabia or whether they stayed in Virginia. And they had the same rate of illness in Virginia that they had in Saudi Arabia, and this rate was way higher than the general public. So you would think, oh, well, it wasn't the water there, it wasn't the stress, it wasn't the psychological stress or the warfare or the shrapnel or the bacteria in their foods, because the people in Virginia were as sick as anyone else, and they had a really high rate of illness, mental illness, autoimmunity, chronic fatigue syndrome, and it's been studied by scientists and doctors outside of the United States, and a connection's been made.
And a couple historical points, too. The Spanish flu in the 19-teens, that started in the military. I'm not surprised.
Really? That killed more people than World War One, didn't
it? Yeah. And it struck in the winters. It came on really strong in the winter when everybody's vitamin D is really low, and went away for the summer and then came back again for a second hit when everybody's vitamin D was low again. And then the other historical piece of military vaccination relates to the swine flu scare of the 1970s. It started at Fort Dix, and very few people actually got the swine flu outside of Fort Dix, but a lot of people were vaccinated for it, and it was one of the biggest fiascos in vaccine history, where our government, just for that, paid out, I think, $3 billion in injuries.
Yes, and that was one of the reasons why in 1986, the vaccine companies went to Congress and said, we need immunity from vaccine injury because we're going to go out of business, because we've paid out $3 billion in that case and $3 billion more for general vaccine injury. And there was an act passed that gives all doctors who administer vaccines and the vaccine manufacturers absolute immunity from liability. And so who pays for vaccine injury? The people do, because every vaccine has a 75-cent tax in it that goes to that fund.
Oh, boy.
All right, folks, we have to go to a break.
We're talking to Vixen Vox on the whole vaccine controversy. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment.
And callers, we know you're there. We'll get to you as soon as we can. Thanks for listening. Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking about vaccines with Vixen Vox. Vixen Vox. We have a caller, Mrs. Future?
Sure, we've got a few of them. I'm going to go to Joe in Santa Cruz, who's been on hold the longest. Hi, Joe. Welcome to the Dr. Future Show.
Hey, Joe.
Hello. You got the oddball on your show today.
Yeah, how so?
Well, I was born with what they call a splenium.
Which is what?
Okay, and which is being born with no spleen.
Oh.
Okay, and that's part of your immune system.
Joe? Yeah, are you...
Let me put it in the simple words, no.
Okay. So do you have much to say about vaccination?
I think vaccinations are the most exploited child abuse thing you could ever do in life. Okay. You want to abuse your children? Vaccinate them. I had a vaccination, and now I suffer the rest of my life with autoimmune system problems because I had no spleen. Maybe they should check these children's internals before they start shooting junk into them.
Well, that's
our kids aren't drug addicts.
Yeah, that's another interesting point. What kind of preconditions, if you have, should you avoid vaccines? Is there any data supporting that?
Absolutely, there's a lot of data. In fact, Dr. Schoenfeld, who we've already mentioned, is an expert in testing your HLA haplotypes. Genetic testing to see what kind of autoimmune diseases you'd be at risk to get if you got vaccinated. That's one way, and I'm going to turn to Vox and let her do the next one.
Well, that's one piece of it, and also vitamin D levels are low, prior illness. Anyone in the family with an autoimmune disease or history of in your family is now a risk factor.
Or a neurological illness, like I had ALS in my family.
Yes, so those are all kind of warning signs where you should be careful.
Or super basic things like, is someone allergic to eggs or gelatin or peanuts?
Right, which I don't feel that the doctors take that seriously, because even in my court case, my children had developed food allergies to things that happened to be in their vaccine. Coincidentally, they created an antigen response, you know, a allergen response against certain components, and then they can no longer have things like neomycin, eggs, dairy.
Right. There's two other big categories that are risk factors. One is a methylation defect called MTHFR, and that's a genetic test that you can get. And then you can also have a mitochondrial disorder, which some say is caused by vaccines, and we don't know if it causes vaccine injury or if the vaccine causes the mitochondrial disorder, but you can test for it.
All right, okay, folks, let's go to our next caller. And Joe, thanks for that, but we just are so short on time, we have to keep going. So Jan in San Lorenzo Valley, thanks for calling back. Welcome to the show.
Oh, you're welcome. I just wanted to make the point that Bill Monning, our California senator, and Mark Stone, our California assemblyman, are the ones who sponsored this bill and got it through. And they're running for re-election, and we should make sure that they do not get re-elected. Homer Cain is running against Manning, and he is a good man. He doesn't believe in forced vaccinations, and I just wanted to get that information out to everybody.
That's a really good point. Vox and I have both been to Sacramento to fight SB 277.
Yeah, and there are politicians who have connections with pharma, like Senator Pan, who is steamrolled this through Congress, and we saw Merck representatives up there whispering in his ear during these hearings, and then people taken off the committee who were voting, who might have voted not to put this bill through, who then all of a sudden are gone. They recess the vote, and then they vote with a new member who's pro-vaccine.
What's the basic gist of SB 77?
SB 277, we mentioned it earlier, and that is taking away the personal exemption right for vaccines for your children. So now, if you want to send your kids to public school, the only exemption is a medical exemption, and they're very hard to get.
Hmm. Okay, we have one more caller. Are you guys ready?
Yeah.
Hello, Colonel Terry. Welcome to the show.
Hi, smart, caring lady, and your smart husband, and your guests are two extraordinary ladies.
Thank you. Can I hear
their names again and where their website information might be or their publication?
Vix and Vox.
Vix and Vox. And go to the drfutureshow.com website. I have the links that they have kindly given me.
Okay. Yes. So ladies, a lot of their information is on our website.
Yeah. Ladies, my perspectives includes working on research and development, including the White House Science Office. And in the Reagan White House as a young Air Force officer when the 86 Act was passed and debated. And the industry tried to get the, let us call it, the Protection Act for vaccination manufacturers. They attempted that many years before it got through in 86, and it took the new Reagan appointees and the Republican toll of the Congress to get it through. But Democrats joined in it as well. And it was such an obvious setup. The tragedy is it reflects the corruption of our politics, the Senate, the House, and even the presidency and FDA and CDC, that resulted in the rest of us paying additional amounts in our vaccination purchases to bail out the industry that doesn't want to do the research and be careful and not be able to package 6 and 3 vaccinations together to maximize their profit. We could easily have addressed this with limiting their profit to demand they be made here under U.S. supervision or have government manufacturers of those that we use. And lastly, stretching out a kid getting vaccinations for a decade or longer instead of MMR and others all bundled together. Do you agree with me that's what has caused the rapid evidence of autism and other inflicted difficulties, illnesses?
We do agree. I mentioned earlier a condition in animals, our pets, called vaccinosis, and I think that's what's happening to our children. And you made a great point about the protections that pharmaceutical companies got for vaccines in 1996 when we passed that act, because after the swine flu vaccine debacle, they said they weren't going to make vaccines anymore unless they could continue making vaccines with zero liability, and that's what we have today.
It's not much different than the Wall Street bailout.
Absolutely.
That's right.
The corruption was horrible. Has anyone done a full expose book on this corrupt action by the pharmaceutical companies and Congress, both parties, and the Reagan administration especially?
Yes. There are a lot of books out there.
Vaccine Epidemic by Mary Holland.
Okay.
And I'm reading one right now called Dissolving Illusions by Suzanne Humphreys, which is excellent. And then we also recommend Neil Z. Miller's book, The Vaccine Data Safety Manual.
Oh, Kevin Barry just wrote a book on the vaccine court, so that would go into the politics.
Oh, surely. Okay.
Thanks for your call, Colonel Terry.
Keep up the good work, ladies. Really, congratulations to you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
I have to point out that the callers on the show have been 100% in the camp of vaccine safety and being very suspicious of the regulations that are forcing us to comply.
Well, I think that if you're not affected or injured by vaccines and you think, oh, it's fine, it was fine for me, you just don't want to delve into this big pot, which is a big black hole. But once you've had to delve into it because of a personal circumstance, you start realizing how broad this is, how broad the fraud is, which we're seeing from the movie Vaxxed, which was just pulled from the Tribeca Film Festival. And It's just a big topic, and a lot of people don't want to touch it until they have to.
Right. Everyone has their teaching moment, and what Vox and I are trying to do is help everybody get to that teaching moment before they have to experience what I went through or what Vox's kids have been through.
That's true. And we have known each other for a long time, and we each actually helped each other in our exploration for whatever helped us, me get my children better and she get better herself. We did a lot of balancing things back and forth, consulting with experts, recommending experts, and supporting each other, because it's a big thing to be ill or have an ill child.
Yeah, that's true. In fact, I wanted to ask each of you to talk just in a very personal, anecdotal way. After the injury, how do you begin the road to recover? What do you do to give yourself some relief from the problem?
Well, I'm going to hand it over to Vox, because what I did as an adult who was vaccine injured, I didn't even know what was going on with me was due to vaccines for many years. And so I just started trying treatments that kids in the autism community were using to get better, and they worked. And I didn't know why until I put it all together. And Vox has actually recovered one of her children from autism.
Yeah, and the thing is autism is a tip of an iceberg, and there's been a lot of good medicine and science in the area. There are a lot of doctors who are autism specialists. Mostly they would come under the umbrella of functional medical doctors. So they're trained as MDs, but they use other tools as well. And also they look at development of the child. Like, there's a lot of information from the Giselle Institute, which comes out of Yale University, on how development plays into medicine and how it should be used. And they're all very broadly trained. And one of the first things that seems to happen is these children develop multiple allergies, which is their immune system going a little bit haywire. And so you start looking at all these allergies and eliminating things that the body's reacting to and trying to quiet it down. Mm-hmm. And the first step is to find a good expert who's open to things beyond just saying, you know, oh, they're just screaming, don't worry. Oh, they have chronic diarrhea. I'm sure they'll get over that at some point. And you're like, it's been about 3 months, you know. Mm-hmm. Oh, the rashes he has on the body and the screaming and the banging of his head. Well, you know what? There's nothing we can do. We don't know what to say. There are people with answers out there. There are doctors who can help you, naturopaths.
Yeah, naturopaths are another good place to go, or a DO, or even a chiropractor. They know a ton about herbs and how to deal with these conditions.
Mm. So, Vix and Vox, in any way that people can reach you if they want to, or should we just send them the links?
Send them the links and screen them. No, I'm just kidding. I'm also part of a secret group that helps parents who are in court on the issues of vaccines. And we've been helping people across the United States and Canada. So any well-screened person can seek resource through you.
Okay. So any questions or comments, or you want info, send it to future@ksco.com and I'll route it to them. So thank you so much for being on the show today. It was really, really great to have you both.
Thanks so much for this opportunity. It was really fun.
Yeah, great.
Thank you.
Right. Okay, this is the Dr. Future Show. Thanks for listening, folks. We'll see you next week.
This is Physio.
This is Physio.